Morning.
Morning, Skaka. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Hassan.
All right, man. I
What
thought
did you do?
I was the only one here today.
Oh.
I've sent you. I received Uma Lucy's presentation for Friday, so I've sent that on to you guys already.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I'll check you just now.
But I'm not feeling so fine today.
Don't worry. I'll just do your roll call and then you can go. Then you can go and rest.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay.
Goeiemôre, meneer Brown.
Môre, DG, hoe gaan dit vanoggend?
Ons kan nie kla, want dit help nie om te kla. Niemand luister nie.
Alright. Ek wil gaan daarna, ek wil gegaan daarna Brackenfell vanoggend, maar ek het nou meeting vandag.
Oh nee, dis goed. Dis goed. Dis goed. U lyk mooi met die parlementgebou daar by jou background. Molweni, sanibonani.
Sawubona DJ.
Ninjani sisi?
Siyaphila enkosi, ninjani?
Hayi, siyanyamezela, sibheka phambili.
We ayikhona indlela. Akho ncwela.
Kunjalo, kunjalo sisi wami.
Molweni, good morning, goeiemôre. Always greetings.
Morning, Hello,
man.
Everybody.
Hello.
DG.
How's
things in Brackenfell this morning? Has the situation normalized?
The Western Cape Department of Education tells us that the matter is under control.
All right. Yeah, I was watching a bit of it this morning on the news.
Yes, yes. They said to us that the situation is under control.
Yeah.
Mr. Brown is starting with oversight questions, DJ.
No, these ones are not oversight questions. I thought they are political questions because political parties are involved there.
Yes.
And some of them will be part of the meeting today. They'll help us to explain.
Ms. Kaka?
Hi, Llewellyn.
Chair just called. I think your chair will be chairing this morning, eh?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, chair will join us a bit later.
Oh,
I think she spoke to him earlier as well. Thanks.
Oh, okay. All right.
Candace, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Suella. Good morning.
And how are you?
Always good, thanks.
Okay, please. Right. Let's do it then. Yes, sir.
Ocha is trying to connect.
Okay.
Good morning.
Morning, Honorable Shabalala.
How are you, Lulin?
Always good. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. I hope you're well.
I'm fine, thanks. Not too bad today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Members.
Morning, Chair.
A very good morning to you.
Morning,
Chair. Mazandona.
Good morning, Mama Chabalala.
I've seen it as
well. Hi, how are you?
1,213.
That's just a meeting.
Good morning, Chairperson. Morning, members of the Portfolio and Select Committee. Morning, Minister, DG, and officials. It's 9 o'clock, Chairperson. I've got about, on my side, I have 5 members of the Portfolio Committee currently in the meeting. I'm not sure whether you want to give it a minute or two for others to join and check with the Select Committee attendance as well. Chairperson, thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Brown. May we check with Noltando how's our attendance on the on our side in the select committee?
Good morning, honorable members, the minister and everyone present in the meeting. We've got 6 members on the side of the select committee, Chair.
Thanks a lot, which we do make a quorum, I guess so. Aren't we? Honorable Hendricks has just joined us, I can see on the... So we do make a quorum for the meeting. Good morning, honorable members. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the ministerial team and, you know, and the team from the department led by the DG and our support staff, of course, all ladies and gentlemen. Today, we will be looking at, before I even rush ahead of myself, let's look at the agenda. There's the agenda, honorable members. Any mover for adoption of the agenda?
Chairperson.
Yes.
I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Yeah, any seconder? Who has moved?
Suela.
Oh, Suela moves for adoption of the agenda. Is there any seconder?
Ndongeni
second. Thanks a lot. Welcome, Minister, and welcome the team. We today looking at the... Can you leave the agenda on? Yeah, thanks a lot. Today we'll be looking at the briefing by the department on the annual report 2019-2020 and the first quarterly report, and then we'll go into consideration and adoption of meeting, and then the meeting is closed. The minister, we have had meetings before in the joint committees of parliament, looking at COVID and readiness in different provinces. And we've also looked at some of the gaps that are, you know, that we found when people are, we realize that there are a lot of gaps. And looking at the report now, you actually see some of those things, you know, being flagged by the AG.
Chairperson, I think we may have lost you for a second there, Chairperson. Chairperson, are you with us? I think we may have lost the Chairperson. Honorable Aduans. Oh, there. Well, Honorable Ndongeni.
Hey, Mr. Brown, good morning. Am I audible?
Morning, Honorable Aduans. Thank you. Yeah, it seems as if we may have lost Chairperson. I'm not sure whether we could allow you just to continue, just to do the opening. Until Chairperson is back with us.
Okay, let me then continue where he left off. I think he was explaining how we had joint meetings as both the NCOP and the National Assembly on dealing with the issues pertaining to basic education or DBE. Let me also just greet everyone in the meeting, the honorable members, the department. I'm not sure whether we have already dealt with the apologies. If maybe we can deal with the roll call and then apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, from the portfolio committee side, we have present Honorable Shabalala, yourself, Honorable Aduans, Honorable Siwela, Honorable Morwa Shekla. I have Honorable Van der Walt, Honorable King, Honorable Mashabela, and those are my members. I've got two apologies, Honorable Machezi and Honorable Sukers, who won't be with us this morning. And of course, Chairperson Honorable Binko Gigaba will be joining us a bit later. In the morning, Chairperson. We also do have an apology for the Deputy Minister who won't be with us. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are the apologies from the Portfolio Committee.
Okay. When then for the NCOP?
Thank you, Chair. From the Select Committee side, I've got the Chairperson, Honorable Chabeleng. I've got Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Lutuli, Honorable Maleka, Honorable Gillion, Honorable Baha, and Honorable Lehihi. I've got one apology, Chair, from Honorable Christians. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Who's leading the department? Is the DG in the meeting? Mr. Mweli?
Chair, the minister is leading the department. I'm part of the meeting. The minister is in the meeting.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Honorable Minister.
No, thank you very much, Whip, and also thank members both of the NCOP and Parliament for the meeting. I see we have a long list of participants, so I'll ask DG to read them to read them out to you. We have almost all our DDGs, but we also have support staff from branches and also the head of the strategic planning sections, which is the team responsible for the strategic report and the and monitoring the department. So DG, if you could just quickly run through the names, the list that the list of managers that we've brought with us from DBE. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister of Basic Education. We have the Chief Director for Legal Services, Advocate Nisa, who's part of the meeting. Sorry, Chair. And then we have the Chief Director for Strategic Planning, Mrs. Carol Nuka-Deliwe. We also have the Head of Infrastructure, Mr. David van der Westhuizen. We have Dr. Faith Khumalo, who's in the Office of the Director General, responsible for coordinating COVID-19 matters. We have the DDG for Provincial and District Coordination, Mrs. Simone Geya. We also have a DDG for the Curriculum Branch, Dr. Mamiki Maboya. And we also have the Head of Internal Audit, Mrs. Emily Muller. We have the Acting Chief Financial Officer and the Acting Branch Head for the Administration Branch, the Chief Director for Finance, Mrs. Nseta Mulelekwa. We have Mr. Neo Mulai from the ministry. And then we have Mr. Pedi Padayaki, the DBG responsible for the branch for teachers, branch T. We also have the chief director for national exams and assessments, public exams and assessments, Dr. Rufus Polia. We've got the acting DDG for the branch, which is called Business Intelligence, Mr. Shiloh Naika. We have the Deputy Director for Communication, Ms. Tobeka Magai. We have the Deputy Director General responsible for the Social Cohesion Branch, Dr. Granville Whittle. And we also have colleagues from the office in Cape Town. I'm trying to pick them up. I picked one of them up. Liz Carolison, Mrs. Liz Carolison is in our office in Cape Town. We also have the manager responsible for parliamentary and business processes, Mr. Mahada. Honorable Minister, those are the officials from the department that have been able to pick up from the platform who are supposed to be part of this meeting. All senior managers are in attendance together with other managers in the department. Thank you very much, Minister.
No, thank you very much, DG. I know that DM was supposed to join us, so I can't see her on the platform. So DM, go on.
DM has tendered her apology, Minister. Okay. She's tendered an apology. She's attending a meeting somewhere in the Northern Cape.
Okay. No, because, okay, she was meant to join, but that's fine. Yeah. Because I didn't get the message. Chief Whip, that's the apology. And with due respect, if by 11 I can be allowed out, I'm supposed to go to the National Coronavirus Command Center. And they want me to come and report on the management of COVID-19 during the exams. So if you could really, I'll stay up to that far. And if you could allow me to leave at 11, just go and give that report. Thank you, Whip.
Thank you. I see I was also taken out. I'm sure it's the network. It's raining this side. Chairperson Chabeleng, I see you are back. Can you take
over
there?
Yeah, I'm back. We on and off. We just have to alternate whenever the reception is lost. Minister, I think it will be okay. We will release you because where you are going to, you are attending a meeting that's of very strategic importance to us. But before you leave, I would like us maybe, you know, before you leave, at least we should have answered some of the questions related to the matric exams and some of the children whose temperature is a bit high, what's going to happen in terms of arrangements for their, you know, for them to write and either at home or wherever. So that information will be very important to this collective before you go. And Honorable Minister, you may give us a report.
I will definitely do that because the National Coronavirus Command team also wants exactly that report that you're asking for. So we will be able to give you an answer because that's what we're dealing with. So at the right time, you will give us an opportunity to report.
Okay.
And head of exams, because they are dealing with those guidelines, will also be able to answer. But I'll stay until 11, Chair.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, may we give over to the team to give us a report to of the annual report. Okay. What are we starting with?
Yeah. Honorable Chair, honorable members, and honorable Minister. Chair, we had thought that we must probably start with an update of the exams, which is a very brief report.
Mm.
It won't take more than 10 minutes. And because the head of exams is here, I'm going to ask him to quickly do it. Otherwise, Dr. Maboya or myself would have been easily able to handle this report. But we are blessed to have the head of exams as part of the meeting. I'm going to request him to quickly take us through this report, then I'll run through the annual report, Chair. Thank you very much. If you allow us to do that.
That will be great. You may continue.
Wonderful. Dr. Polia?
Good morning to the honorable chairpersons, honorable members, and good morning also to the DBE team together with our DG and our honorable minister. Thank you for this opportunity of clarifying this very important matter regarding the national public examinations. We've come to realize over the years that in an examination environment, there has to be consistent and uniform transfer of information from source to the school or to the examination center. And wherever there is the slight bit of misinterpretation or confusion with regard to information sharing, it can have disastrous results. And I think at the outset, we must indicate that this being the largest examination that this country has ever conducted has presented its own challenges. Firstly, because of the large numbers and the fact that we were combining two examinations into one, something we've not done previously, combining the June examination, which should have been written in June, and the November examination. And it was even more complicated given the fact that these two examinations are in fact directed to two separate qualifications. So that was the first challenge in terms of a combined exam. But obviously with COVID-19, that's where the greater challenge emerged. And this challenge emerged given the fact that we have never conducted an examination under such conditions. And we were therefore dependent on the science. We were dependent on the experts to advise us in terms of how best do we manage this examination under COVID conditions. I think the imperative when it comes to examinations is that, as Minister always has maintained, that every child must write the examination, irrespective of what the current conditions are. And as a department, we've had a track record of taking this examination to prisons. If learners end up in prison, we've taken the examination to hospitals when learners were admitted to hospital on the morning of the examination. Obviously, if they are in a position to write the examination. And I think Minister always talks about the fact that we administered an examination to a learner in hospital, and that learner did not live to see the results, but the learner just had a desire to write the examination, and that gave him his own kind of fulfillment. And so that's the kind of accommodation that we try to bring to the examination process. So when we started looking at the writing of the 2020 NSC exams and COVID, I think based on the advice and on the wide consultation that we had engaged in on different fronts, it was clear to us that if you get to an examination center and you present a high temperature, which is above 38 degrees Celsius, as well as you present any other symptoms that are COVID related, we will not allow you to write the exam. Because obviously, we were concerned about the majority of learners and protecting their welfare, their health, and their well-being. The other decision that was made was that if you tested positive before the writing of that examination, you have to serve out your isolation period outside the examination venue, which means that you will not be allowed to write the examination for those 10 days of isolation. And we were under the assumption that that decision at that time was the appropriate decision. We developed clear protocols, which were then provided to all our schools, all our districts, provincial education departments. And immediately the protocol was sent out, we found that we had a number of queries. And the queries at that point, Honorable Chairperson, related to learners that presented a temperature above 38 degrees Celsius. And parents were now arguing that a temperature above 38 degrees Celsius does not imply that the learner is COVID positive. And therefore, the suggestion being made was that these learners should be allowed to write. And then we consulted with Department of Health and all the experts available, and they then guaranteed us that it would be fine for these learners to write, but they must write at a separate venue, away from the venue where the rest of the learners would be writing. So we amended our protocol, and we then agreed that only learners who have a temperature above 38 degrees Celsius and present one or two other symptoms should write in an isolation room, and they would have special invigilation, strict adherence to social distancing, sanitizing, and the wearing of face masks. We amended our protocol, and immediately after we sent out the amended protocol, then interestingly, Chairperson, we then had a whole host of queries, and parents were now insisting that learners that have tested positive should be allowed to write as well. And my assumption is that parents, initially, the issue of testing positive was not a priority to them. But when we got to 2 or 3 days before the exam, and parents whose learners had tested positive, this now became an urgent matter. And this is why Minister and DG received a number of queries in this regard. And after urgent consultation with the Department of Health, which was done by our Minister and DG, we then agreed that we will amend the protocol and allow learners that are positive. Obviously, it has to be conducted outside of the regular examination venue so that we do not in any way risk the current learners. And our understanding at that point was that it could be conducted at the quarantine sites that were established by the Department of Health, and the Department of Health will assist us with the invigilation of these examinations. So on that basis, Minister and DG released a statement informing learners that if they're positive, we will then accommodate them in our examination arrangement, but outside of the regular examination venue. However, in further deliberation and discussion with the Department of Health, we realized that they have decommissioned their quarantine centers and they do not have all the resources. But I must say, Honorable Chairperson, that a number of provinces, the Department of Health are working very closely with the Department of Education, and we are managing the learners in terms of those that are tested positive. So that's the background, Honorable Chairperson, and my apologies for taking so long. And now I can get to the presentation, which gives us an update of where we are. But unfortunately, I'm not seeing the slides on the screen, and I'm not sure why. Mr. Mahada, oh, thank you very much. If you could go to the beginning, Mr. Mahada, that was just my introduction, and my apologies for such a long introduction, but I thought I had to contextualize what's in the presentation. Honorable Chairperson, this is where we are in terms of the examination. We've had CAT, which is Computer Applications Technology, Information Technology, English File, English Home Language, Afrikaans, all levels, non-official languages, and our African languages have been written together with Agricultural Science, Nautical Science. And these are the numbers, and you will see the very large numbers that we have to accommodate. Sepedi, Setswana, Sesotho, Shivenda, Setsonga is being written as we talk this morning, and civil technology will be written this afternoon, and those are the numbers. In terms of progress to date, we've had power outages with regard to CAT and IT, but in isolated cases. I mean, Eskom really has come to the party and assisted us the best they could. And what I can report, Honorable Chairpersons, Honorable Members, is that in all cases, candidates were able to write, and they either had to be moved to an alternative venue, compensated for the lost time. And so we have no incident where a learner could not write the CAT and IT paper because of electricity-related problems. And I can also indicate, and the Almighty is certainly in control, thus far the examinations have gone extremely well. There's been no serious problems. There have been minor problems, you know, with the candidate not returning the script on time, but there are mechanisms in place to deal with each of these issues, so nothing serious. There were COVID cases, and I think this is what we need to report on in terms of the COVID cases that were presented on the 5th, the Thursday, and then the 6th, the Friday, and yesterday, the 9th. And on the next slide, we have a list of the... I must say, Honorable Chairperson, that our teacher unions, our SGB associations, our professional bodies have been extremely supportive. Our DG convened a meeting until late on Friday night, moving into Saturday, and we managed to explain to these partners, our social partners, in terms of the reason for the late change and why they were not consulted ahead of time, and they accepted, and we have their full support, and we were able to make sure that the relevant and appropriate and accurate information was communicated to them by the end of the weekend. And currently, all social partners, all provincial colleagues involved in examination have in their possession clear protocols which clearly articulate how do you manage the examination for learners who test or present a temperature above 38 degrees and other symptoms, as well as learners that are positive. And I think I've explained that already. Now, in the case of candidates that are tested positive, given the fact that we may not have the quarantine sites at the point where the learner is located, we've now agreed that between the Department of Health and the PD exams unit, they will locate a suitable venue. And we're saying that a suitable venue could be a clinic, could be a community facility, a community hall, a church building, or any other suitable venue. In fact, we've gone to the extent of even including the home. But we're saying that the home must be a last resort, knowing full well that a home in the South African context varies from one situation to the other. But where we think the home is suitable, spacious, quiet, conducive to the writing of an examination, it will be done. But obviously, before an examination is conducted at any of these venues, it must comply with the health and safety regulations. And I must say, already, we've had some very encouraging reports of how Department of Health has supported our learners by even providing, you know, the full gear that some of our invigilators had to put on in order to invigilate. Although the full gear coming from Department of Health themselves is not really necessary. And so in the next slide, I talk about the actual cases and what happened. But I also want to say that in terms of the examination thus far, where there were quarantine centers, we've used them. But the big issue has been the invigilation. And I think our unions expressed concern about that we were possibly exposing their members to risk. So we are clear about that, Honorable Chairperson, that a teacher will only invigilate after we've explained to him the situation that he's being exposed to, what the risk element is, and we are saying that the teacher must provide a written consent that he's prepared to invigilate. If teachers are not prepared to invigilate, we then would utilize private invigilators. Private invigilators would be members of the community who satisfy certain criteria. But obviously, if it's a private invigilator, they must also be given a clear and a detailed account of what the situation entails so that they understand the risk. But like I said, that our health experts tell us that the risk is virtually non-existent if you keep the social distancing, sanitize, and wear the face mask. And what I want to say also, Honorable Chairperson, that the number of learners writing is one and two in two provinces, or maybe one province where we've had larger numbers. And if you have one and two learners in a room, you can spread them out and, you know, the invigilator could be at one corner. And we even said that in certain rooms where you have good windows, I mean, the invigilator can stand at a window, provided you have a good view of what the learner is doing. So there are various creative methods that have emerged in terms of how we could manage these learners. So Honorable Chairperson, this is the status in terms of the number of learners. In Free State, we had 13 learners, and these 13 learners had just come out of a spring camp, and they tested positive. So they were at a quarantine site, and so we were able to conduct the examination at the quarantine center. And medical nurses invigilated after being trained by the examination officials. In the Eastern Cape, we had four learners. They also wrote at an isolation center at the school, and teachers invigilated. Kaohsiung had one learner, and that's where the Department of Health came in, provided the gear, and an educator volunteered to invigilate. KZN, three candidates at the school, and teachers invigilated again. In the case of Limpopo, one learner wrote at school at an isolation room and the teacher invigilated. So that was day one of our exam. Day two, Eastern Cape, 15 learners. And here again, Eastern Cape had learners coming out of the spring camp, and that's where they contracted the virus. And 14 of the 15 learners were able to write, but unfortunately the one learner, we could not get him to write, but we do have a mechanism where we will be able to accommodate this one learner. Western Cape, on Friday, one learner wrote at a school, and the learner had to be moved to another school because the teachers at that school were not prepared to invigilate, but a private invigilator who was a community member invigilated that examination. And there were two learners at KZN. For yesterday, we had only one learner at the school that wrote at an isolation room, and the teacher invigilated. So that is the account from our side. I'm sorry for taking longer than scheduled, but I think I just need to assure honorable members that we are monitoring this exam with hawky eyes and making sure that we get information on a daily basis, particularly in terms of the COVID situation. We understand it's extremely delicate. We don't want to be held responsible for a spread of these infections. So we're taking no chances in terms of compromising on any of the protocols that need to be observed, but I think the support from members of the community and the sacrifices, particularly that some of our teachers are being, that are making to invigilate is heartwarming. And I think we need to assure you that we will always make sure that the best interest of the learner is upheld. Best interest in terms of his or her health, which is priority, and best interest in terms of them writing the examination. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and sorry for the lengthy presentation.
Thanks a lot. And then I gave you some time because it's very important so that people should know what is happening, particularly because there was this scare about children being infected when they write exams. And there's a system that you show in place that no child will be disallowed to write their exams just because of their temperature. That should not happen. And I'm happy, we all happy that you are, that there are other citizens, you know, in members of the communities who volunteer after being trained to take this mammoth task. Thanks a lot. DG, you may continue with the...
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We'll now get into the annual report and thank the Head of Exams, Dr. Polia, for a very comprehensive presentation and for the excellent work that they are doing. Chair, I'm going to try and move very fast, assuming that honorable members have gone through the report. I won't read the report, the presentation. I'll just speak to it as quickly as I can. There are four parts to this report, Chair. We have the first part, which is just an overview of the service delivery environment and the context. And then part two is about reporting on programs in terms of the predetermined objectives. And then part C deals with the financials, how we've been able to appropriate, spend the money allocated to the department. And the last part will be the Auditor General's report. Next slide. Well, I've skipped the purpose. Yeah, the purpose is really to cover those four areas, Chair, that I've referred to. I'll move to the programs. We're dealing with five programs. It's the administration, curriculum, policy, support, and monitoring. The administration supports the core business. Curriculum is the real core business, and teacher education, human resources, and institutional development, that remains important for the sector, and therefore from policy development, monitoring, and support to provinces, that remains also important. The fourth program deals with planning, information, and assessment. And then the last one is education enrichment services. Those are the five programs there. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I really want to pay, to draw your attention rather to this slide. It's a very important slide. I begin with the number of indicators, slightly less than last year by about four indicators. In terms of the total number of indicators, 43 compared to 47. If you look at annual indicators, you've got the year before the one under review, you had 33, which constituted 70%. And this time around, you've got 24, which constitute 56%. Quarterly targets, previous year, you had 12, which constituted 26%, and the year under review is 17, which is up to 40%.
And then biannual targets, the year before the year under review, you had two constituted 4% this year, also two, which gives you about 4 to 5%. Well, in terms of targets not achieved, is just one, the year before, which is 2%, and then year under review, you've got three, which is 7%. Partially achieved, the year before is 13%. The year under review is just 7%. And it's very important to compare not achieved and partially achieved. You can see that this year, we've done much better than even the previous year, despite the fact that our last quarter was locked down in COVID-19, but we performed much better than the previous year. If you look at what has been achieved, all in all, the year before, the year under review is 85%. This year is 86%, 1% higher, despite the difficulties that I have referred to earlier on. Overall, this year it's essentially better than last year by all accounts. So we'll move to the next slide. That's a pie chart. You can see that the green in terms of the year under review, slightly more than the green in the year before the year under review. We move to the next one. Well, that's part two, the overview. We look at the legislative mandate. We also look at the statutory role of DBE, which is essentially to develop policies, norms and standards, monitor, evaluate, and provide support. At the center of it is to make sure that young people have got access to basic education. Next slide. We also look at the delivery environment, DBE providing leadership of provincial efforts, of course, following the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework from 2014-2019, and therefore taking it forward in terms of action plan 2019 towards schooling 2030. And that got reviewed to Action Plan 2014 towards schooling 2030. And then we look at key priorities identified as indicated there, quality of teaching and learning, quality of teaching and learning through infrastructure, learning and teaching support materials, issues of assessment of learning remain very cardinal, early childhood development, grade R and pre-grade R, and of course, management at school, community and district level, and we end with partnerships for education. Well, that's the action plan, 2024, towards schooling 2030. We've aligned the action plan. The first goal one up to 13, it's really about improving learning outcomes. Goal 14 up to goal 27, it's about supporting the improvement of learning outcomes. Next slide. We just provide highlights comparing 2018-2019 with 2019-2020 there. We look at the National Senior Certificate, and it provides data on how we have performed there. We can move to the next slide. We hope that we'll meet that performance, or if not, given the hurdles that we had to go through, at least come close to meeting those numbers. And we continue to provide a comparison of 2019 2018-2019 and 2019-2030 in terms of the workbooks, in terms of Funza Lushaka, Bazas. Next slide. Also the number of young people who enter the profession of teaching physical science laboratories which were supplied and consumables. We're giving that comparison between those years. Monitoring of the National School Nutrition Program, a number of schools visited and supported provided there. Can move to the next. Part two is about program performance. We look at program one. Program one is really to support the rest of the other programs. And indicator 1.1.1 up to 1.1.2 has been achieved with a slight variation, small variation in 1.1.1. Next slide. And we're just indicating activities, human resources there. In terms of the posts that were filled, and then we move to strategic planning, research and coordination, reading support project, some of the activities that took place, the early grade reading in the Lichtenberg in the Northwest, which is where the research started. So some work still going on there, and the 25-year review activity which the line function got involved in. Can move to the next slide. School monitoring survey, we still continuing with the work of the line function, the analysis of the state of the nation address, so that we factor it in the work that we do, and it begins to inform our priorities and our plans going forward. In terms of the new administration, which is the sixth administration. Next slide. Well, early years of index and baseline assessment of early learning programs, that's the work that the line function was involved on, where data was collected at 114 out of 540 early learning programs. Before the outbreak of COVID-19, and also supported the function shift in terms of ECD. You can proceed. Well, still the work of the line function there, the annual performance plan, DBE 2019-2020 APP, which was tabled as indicated, the strategic plan also tabled as indicated, but also coordinating the same documents in terms of our entities, SAIS and UMALUS. Next slide. Well, branch reviews were also conducted to inform planning and reporting activities for the branches, and the revised framework for the strategic plan, as well as performance indicators for 2020 and 2021 up to 2024 and 2025 strategic plan, and the 2020-2021 APP. And these are the institutional reporting details that are provided here in the slide, oversight reporting body, as well as dates as indicated and the required report. Can move to the next slide. The work of the line function also continues, the annual report, evaluation of the service delivery improvement plan, the establishment of the national expenditure information session workshops, which was chaired by National Treasury, the first draft 2020 and ENE chapter, and submitted to National Treasury on the 16th of November 2019. That's part of the activities of the line function. Again, continuing dealing with matters that relate to outcome 1, as well as outcome 7, outcome 13, and outcome 14. The HEDCOM subcommittees, also matters that are dealt with there. Can move. Next slide. sector reporting, special subcommittees on PME activities that took place there, the meetings that were held as indicated, and as well as public entities activities. Umalusi says reports which were analyzed aligned to the mandate of the entities as indicated in the slide. Well, we're just giving figures in terms of scheduled meetings, meetings held, unscheduled meetings, meetings not held. But overall, we had many, many meetings that took place, essentially virtual towards the end. But before then, those were face-to-face meetings. Well, coordinated the annual schedules of meetings of HEDCOM subcommittees, assessment of the functionality of these committees, also coordinated the CEM workshops, a broad management retreat, as indicated there. Next. Basic education sector, the quota, which is one of our annual big events. And I mean, next year it might take a different form. That was probably the last one on face-to-face. It attracts between 400 up to 600 participants, drawn from National Department of Basic Education, provincial departments, NGOs in the sector, and other role players, including stakeholders who are attending that. I've covered all that. Media liaison and national and provincial communication and research. This is the work that took place there of the line function as indicated in this slide. We can move to the next slide. Internal audit. Chair, you also asked about the internal audit. This is the work that the internal audit has done, plus the audit committee. They've been quite busy throughout guiding the department in terms of dealing with the risks and internal control weaknesses in the sector. Then the next one, it's some activities that took place within the office of the Director General. And the information is provided there in terms of those activities. Next slide. The next slide continues. Next slide. And the next slide also continues. And then just a few pictures there. And then we move to program two. And then in terms of program two, performance indicators, the first two are achieved. No deviation in both 2.1.1 and 2.1.2. Those are achieved. We move to the next slide, slide 40. 2.2.1 up to 2.2.3 also achieved. And continuing to the next slide, slide 41, 2.3.1. Going down to 2.3.3 have been achieved. And the next slide, slide 42, 2.4.1, a variation of 2 there, and we've provided an explanation of what happened and a corrective action we've also provided there. But the following indicator has indeed been achieved, which is 2.4.2. And we then continue, 2.5.1 has been achieved, a slight variation on 2.5.2 of -3, and then next we provided an explanation there and a corrective action. 2.6.1 has been achieved with a big positive variation there. And then we move to the next slide. 2.7.1 has also been achieved with a huge variation of 5,528. And then we give some detail in terms of LTSM activities workbooks. As you can see, it's a flagship program of the department. It's really been carrying the department from its inception, doing exceptionally well, particularly in instances where we are late, even in delivering textbooks, but workbooks being there all the time. And we providing details in terms of even Braille workbooks. And I'm sure Honorable Van der Waald and Honorable Suker will be happy to see this detail covering learners with special education needs. Math, science and technology, coding and robotics, which is the next slide, slide number 46. And a curriculum that has now been developed for grade R to grade 9 for coding and robotics, and monitoring of curriculum and assessment policy statement for your technical schools, 18 technical schools, but also training in provinces as indicated in this slide. The next slide. Next slide is around curriculum innovation and e-learning, content development and distribution, work and activities that took place in those provinces, issues of connectivity, issues of ICT infrastructure, as indicated in that slide. And we continue in the next slide, which is slide number 48. It goes on to slide number 49, still activities of e-learning. And then slide 50 is rural education. And we're providing activities of particularly education assistant project. The number of education assistants that have been provided to this project and the activities that are going on in the provinces that are targeted by this. And then we move to the next slide, which is quality provision of ECD. And here we indicate some activities related to training, providing numbers, practitioners that were involved. We also even indicate the level of training in terms of the NQF and the centers that were also covered in this respect. And then the next slide continues with some work around the same line function involving ECD from Department of Social Development, and we reflect on those activities. And then the next slide, slide number 53, is further education and training. We also indicate monitoring activities in Limpopo and Eastern Cape, and we indicate activities related to the revision of study guides, exemplar question papers, vacation schools which were monitored, and we're also giving the numbers there. Slide number 54, we continue with the FET activities, workshops that took place, marking standardization, indicating the reports that were dealt with there, item and error analysis which was conducted, and pre-standardization meetings and development of the diagnostic report for 5 high enrollment, 11 home languages, which are very important to inform teaching and learning. Again, we continue with the FET History Ministerial Task Team, looking at the role of history, strengthening the provision of history from lower grades, looking at the possibility of history being offered to all learners, mid-year and final evidence-based report, which was submitted to Umalusi, the development of 45 Mind the Gap literature study guides to support home languages, subject profiles, revised and submitted the amended NSC Level 4 qualification for approval by Umalusi, and as well as comprehensive quality career information provided to 639 clients at DBE Keta Work-in Center. The next slide is around the GET work, total number of schools implementing multi-grade toolkit, early grade reading assessment, reading norms, desktop monitoring instrument, incremental introduction of African languages, we're reflecting some activities there. Inclusive education, designation, conversion, resourcing of full service schools and other related activities, standard operating procedures developed to assist PEDs in implementing the Auditor General's recommendations in this regard in terms of the sector audit, monitoring and strengthening of public schools for learners with special education needs, also looking at matters related to assistive devices, special schools principals, therapists, officials at district level and so on, were involved, issues of connectivity, devices to all learners with special education needs. The Second Chance Matric Program, 67 communities of the Department of Higher Education and Training were also provided with DVD containing selected content. Continuing with partnerships to make available materials, 122 Vodacom centers and 43 UNISA centers. And again, activities of the Second Chance Matric Program. I am aware that this is going to be presented also to the Portfolio Committee sometime in the future, but we're reflecting on a myriad of activities that we have carried out under this program. Then we move to Program 3. Program 3 is really about quality of teaching and institutional performance through effective supply, development, and utilization of human resources. Indicator 3.1.1 to 3.1.2 have been covered with variances that are indicated there, positive variances. 3.2.1 has been achieved with a small variance there of minus 46. And then 3.3.1 up to 3.3.4 have been achieved with no deviation. 3.4.1 to 3.5.1 have also been achieved, the first two with some small positive variation and not deviation in the last one. Some activities, performance management and development and whole school evaluation. Seven provincial education departments were monitored, and the numbers are indicated of educators who participated in workshops, collective agreements on the quality management system. This is very groundbreaking because for the first time, we'll now have a performance agreement for school principals and eventually for school management team. And learner performance, for the first time in our history, will form part of that performance agreement, which never happened before. Seven PEDs were also supported to reposition and strengthen whole school evaluation implementation as part of improving learning outcomes. And the next slide, which is slide 66, is education human resource planning. And we continue with more activities in this program, and we move to slide number 67. We look at the filling in of teaching posts across the 9 provinces, and we provide some data there. And slide number 68, we then look at the placement of the Funza Lushaka buzzers, and we provide an update in that regard. Slide number 69 is education, labor relations, and conditions of service. I've covered the issue of the standard operating procedures and issues of disciplinary code and procedure. related to labor relations and provinces that were involved and were visited for monitoring, evaluation, and support of the implementation of collective agreements. Slide number 70 is initial teacher education, and we're providing numbers of awarded students with bursaries from the 31st of March 2020, and we're indicating the number of those who receive promissory notes or letters as part of the recruitment process, and activities related to curriculum research. And we continue with education management, governance, and development. Development of the advanced diploma in leadership and management, which has been completed, draft framework for the induction of newly appointed school principals, the framework of the training of departmental heads, issues relating to business process for registration and admission of learners has also been completed to obviate issues of admissions and registration of learners. Slide number 72, we're continuing with professional teacher development, and we're indicating the National Association for English Teachers in South Africa, which was held to strengthen the support of associations in provinces. And there are other activities of educator sign up on participation on CPTD system, which increased as indicated, and the reporting on teacher participation in the system, involvement of professional teacher associations which attended training as indicated there. Slide number 73, learning and teaching support material and policy development innovation. We documenting activities with statistics there of what we have been able to carry out. And we continue to slide number 74, LTSM policy development and innovation, reading to lead campaign, which was led by our honorable minister over the country to encourage the community to read for pleasure, because a reading community would be a community that would encourage its children to read and therefore lead. PEDs have also established reading clubs in various districts and supported by partners. Teacher development implementation, we also provide activities and dates of what we've been able to do there, even on a digital platform, making use of a number of digital platforms that are available. I now go to the last but one program, planning, information, and assessment. Well, in terms of the indicators 4.1.1 to 4.1.3 achieved with a nice positive deviation, and the second one, no deviation, the last one, small deviation there. 4.2.1, a deviation of 14, which remains our Achilles heel. The issue of making sure that we meet our targets in terms of a number of new schools built and completed through ACIDI. And we have given some of the reasons for the delays and what we are going to do to counter some of these challenges, which is information that has been shared with the portfolio committee and the select committee already. And 4.2.2 is an area of, we acknowledge growth under achievement, under sanitation, but under the leadership of the minister and the deputy minister, we have put mechanisms in place. Issues that were attributable to underperformance here, we believe that they've been dealt with. Now going forward, the DM and the minister convene meetings every week to look at progress and to determine whether progress is being made on a weekly basis so that we don't necessarily wait for the end of the quarter of the financial year before we determine whether there are challenges and how to deal with those challenges. And the next one is 4.2.3, which relates to the two. As I've said, these are the three areas of our Achilles heel, which we have not performed well in at all. And we have also provided the reasons and corrective measures going forward. This also, just to remind members of the Portfolio and Select Committee, we had to take some of the projects from some of the implementing agents and reallocate them to others. And that also took some time for the new implementing agents to start moving and deliver on those projects. 4.3.1, positive variance. 4.3.2, no deviation but achieved. 4.4.1 to 4.4.2 also achieved. The other one, positive variance. The other one, no deviation at all. 4.3, slide number 83, a positive deviation. And of course, the 4.4.4, it's a huge negative variation there. We accept that we really underperformed there and we should have really been able to meet that target. But we have provided some explanation, but we accept that we could have done much better than indicated there. Slide number 84, we provide exam activities, setting and moderation of question papers, which is what we usually do, led by Dr. Polia and the very capable team. As well as, you know, the practical performance assessment tasks, the exemplar and common examination for grade 11 and grade 12, common examinations for grade 10 and grade 11 for physical science and maths, and English paper 3, which were developed, but also moving to conduct of the 2019 June National Senior Certificate and Senior Certificate examinations, and we have provided numbers there, the marking guidelines, Umalusi approving and declaring the result as credible as indicated in the date. We continue with exams, quality assurance of school-based assessment, PEDs, hard at work in subjects that are indicated there, the quality assurance of marking and moderation. People think that the exam line functions comes to life only during the administration of exams. No, throughout the year, there's lots of work happening, culminating into the administration of the exam, as it has been covered as evidence in this regard. We move to slide number 87. Monitoring and coordination of provincial support, which is the work that they also do as indicated on that slide. And slide number 88 is grant management, which involves your different grants. We'll see from the expenditure whether these activities yielded any results. The annual performance evaluation report in terms of the grants management. And on slide number 89, the activities of grant management continue. Slide 90, slide 91 there. And slide 92 is education management information. SASMs, the modernization of SASMs remains cardinal. The LURIDS, verifying LURIDS learner data with home affairs database, which is very important to deal with issues of errors, issues of fraud, and so on. That is very important for us, and also getting systems of government to verify each other or to talk to each other. Financial planning, provincial budget monitoring, this remains very important. Our team goes out regularly, virtually on a quarterly basis, to go out, monitor provinces, provide support to them. to ensure improvements in performance, including areas of rationalization of schools, which cause fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which we have seen from the Auditor General's report, because you'd find that when teams go out, they only discover that the school has been rationalized, doesn't exist anymore, but government has got to incur costs because of that. So this line function helps us to pick up on these issues of rationalization. And reports provided on visits to provinces as indicated there. Economic analysis from slide number 94, slide number 95, and then slide number 96, it's actually project management and again monitoring provinces, going to provide support to provinces. Slide number 97, it's partnerships there as indicated, Chair. And it continues to slide number 98, 99, going through to slide number 100. And then slide number 101 is international relations and multilateral affairs. As indicated, as it will be indicated even in the first quarterly report, even during lockdown, there's been an ongoing engagement between us and our counterparts in different parts of the world. And we're also indicating here some of the countries in Africa that we are working with, because it's not only overseas that we draw on best practice and draw on lessons that help to improve the system. So the international relations and multilateral affairs has been hard at work, and it continues to slide number 102, slide number 103. And then from slide number 104 is the South African National Commission of UNESCO, which is doing a whole lot of work or activities as indicated there, involving, you know, partners from different parts of the world representing us there, but also bringing them to South Africa. Slide number 105 is district planning. A number of activities there. We out to districts, mentorship, activities for circuit managers and district managers. It continues to slide number 106, right down to slide number 107, and we move to 108, 109, up to slide number 110. And 110. And school level planning and implementation and support from districts. Now moving down to school level, and we're indicating those activities there, dealing with underperforming schools, underperforming secondary schools, underperforming primary schools. We move on to slide number 112. And then slide number 113 is customer relations management and national coordination, the call center. The call center number is always published. You find it in our workbooks as well, and you can access us. And we're giving the number of calls that we had to deal with from first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, cumulatively giving you that number of 7,997. In terms of the year under review. But slide number 114, then it's about dealing with presidential hotlines, what is referred from the presidential hotlines. And that continues to slide number 115, as well as the revised 2020 school calendar, which we had to revise several times, but including probably the school calendar of 2021 that we eventually developed. And then the work of the National Education Evaluation and Development Unit, we've documented the activities that they've been carrying out from slide number 116 to slide number 117. And the last program is the program that deals with social cohesion, and indicator 5.1.1 has been achieved with a positive variance, as you can see there. 5.2.1, slight negative variation, and 5.2.2 up to 5.4.1 achieved with some positive variances there. And we indicating key activities in this program: school nutrition, psychosocial support, including training of learner support agents that are very important in the absence of enough social workers, psychologists, and so on, display a very important role in keeping our young people supported in terms of psychosocial trauma that they might be experiencing. Monitoring of psychosocial support in those provinces as indicated. Health promotion in slide number 122, which continues to slide number 123. And then in slide number 124, safety in schools, which remains our full occupation, working with other role players, NGOs, working with communities there to deal with issues of school safety. Partnerships in education, particularly your school enrichment program. You can see the school sport workshops, the National K Motsepe School Cup, the National K Motsepe School Cup football, netball, indigenous games, festivals, partnerships continue to slide number 126 as indicated, the spelling bee, ABC Motsepe South African School Choral Eisted Fort. Unfortunately, this year we couldn't have that, but these partnerships continue. Social cohesion and gender equity, National Moot Court Program, the Inkosi Albert Luthuli Oral History Program, which remains one of our flagship programs, administration of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, assistance program, which is provided to 500 applicants, who are deserving. We're providing support to these applicants year in and year out. The National Heritage Education School Outreach Program. And we then move to slide number 124. The activities continue there throughout 129. In slide number 130, we just indicating that the department has been audited, but due to COVID-19 challenges, the audit activities had to be, the scope had to be narrowed due to those challenges. The audit outcome for performance information is unqualified, which is an improvement from 2019-2018 financial year. And then we get into slide number 132. We're just indicating that the vote had 24.4 billion, which was allocated to the department. 82.2% of this amount, it's actually transfers that are indicated in terms of conditional grants, transfers to public entities and other transfers as indicated there. And then the remainder of the budget is then allocated as a compensation of employees, examiners and moderators, earmarked funds, office accommodation, specifically and exclusively appropriated, departmental operations and departmental projects as indicated there. Slide number 133. In this slide, we just indicate total expenditure, 23.8 billion of the allocated amount. And we're indicating that an amount of 20.1 billion is made up of transfer payment as indicated, which is essentially a repetition of what I covered earlier on. The next slide, we just providing how programs performed. The only program that really underperformed is program two, because in terms of program two and program, maybe program four, in terms of treasury standards, if you are within the 2%, then you are deemed to have performed. If you are, your underperformance is higher than, or overperformance is higher than 2%, then you are deemed to have underperformed. And under program two, the main issue here is the second chance program and some saving that has been made from workbooks and some money which could not be spent by the Free State in terms of learners with profound intellectual disabilities. But in terms of program one, as we've explained before, reorganization of the organizational structure, which took some time. We've started filling those posts now, and so that should be something behind us. And I'm program two, I've given reasons to that. And program three, the remaining balance of this program is due to underspending of IQMS as well as compensation of employees, which would also in part be covered in terms of program one. In program four, the main issue was the SAFE program, as indicated in the explanation that I've given under performance indicators. And I've indicated that the minister and deputy minister have added to the impetus of monitoring weekly performance of the program. Can move to the next slide. Well, economic classification, well, compensation of employees, we've provided an explanation on that, but overall, as we can see, underperformance of about 2.5%. Next slide. And economic classification, we've also given reasons as to the underperformance there, which is consistent with the explanation that we have covered there. And goods and services, it's essentially around IT, where some of the procurement were caught up in the outbreak of COVID-19. Transfers and subsidies, we're indicating the amount which was allocated to LSPID, chair of the select committee, with respect to the Free State, would have been an issue there. The next slide, well, payment of capital assets. I have explained this one. It's sanitation projects in the main, the issues that were also referred to in the indicator of performance. Next slide. Well, economic classification, what is becoming quite interesting is that we can see that most of the areas are up except for compensation of employees and school infrastructure backlog grant, which remains the Achilles heel there. Next slide. I'm sure honorable members will be very happy to observe that grants, look at the performance of the grants, going lower down. Of course, math, science and technology is oversight. It's money that should have been used to go and monitor, because towards the end of the fourth quarter, that money could not be used. That is, I'm drawing your attention to 77% that you see there. It's only oversight, but the actual money that goes to the classroom, you can see 100% expenditure all the way in your conditional grants. As you can see, LSPID 96.2, had the Free State played along, would also be talking 100% there, as I've explained earlier on. The next slide. Next slide is the Part D. Part D is the Auditor General's report. We're just giving Out of five qualifications that we're battling with the last 2 years, we've at least managed to remove three of the five. We remain with capital commitments, and we have provided an explanation in each of those qualifications. And the second one is regular expenditure. Yesterday, we had a workshop which was led by the Auditor General and internal Head of Internal Audit in the department, who provided comprehensive presentations on what the weaknesses are in internal controls and what we need to do to fix those weaknesses. Implementing agents were invited to that workshop. Senior managers of the department were leading. We are hoping that it's a beginning to take us to an unqualified report, if not a clean report, come 2020-2021 audit cycle. Matters of emphasis, details are provided there. I'm not going to go into that. I'm moving to slide number 49. We just provide an analysis of this. Slide number 50, which we give a comparison of the 3 years. Honorable members can see that at least we are back to 2017-2018 in terms of reducing the number of qualifications to instead of five. We move to the next slide. And we in terms of the pie charts there, we do that comparison. And of course, you can see that 2019-2020 is comparable to 2017-2018. We've at least moved away from 2018-2019, which was our bad year. If we continue this way, we should definitely go to unqualified and even move over to a clean report. Next slide. The next slide is a slide that came from the workshop yesterday, which clearly shows that what are the key issues that we need to attend to. You can see that 2019-2020 again compares to 2017-2018. Your 2018-2019 remains an outlier, which means that if we are here in 2019-2020, we are very close to getting where we should be, unqualified or even a clean report. Next slide. Next slide is performance information. We are unqualified there. We can see we are better than the previous 2 years in terms of performance information reliability, credibility of performance information in terms of the predetermined objectives. I'm about to conclude. The last two slides are about COVID-related procurement by the department. You would be aware that the Auditor General made a finding about PPEs that were higher than the threshold provided by National Treasury simply because they were procured through the third party. The third party is the owner of the building that we are occupying. And the corrective measure that we have taken is that, one, we needed to carry out an investigation done by the internal audit unit. Secondly, we have stopped the procurement through the third party, and we are saying we have to go out like all others, get into the market and get the best prices like we have done when we procured masks for Northwest, for Limpopo, for Mpumalanga and Gauteng, and were able to buy masks at 18 rand, lower than the threshold of National Treasury of 25 rand per mask. Chair, that essentially concludes the me, and thank you, Minister. Chair, I'm done. Chairperson, I am done.
There are so many chairs in this meeting. I'm not sure if Honorable Elek Ntshabeleng is around, but I see Honorable Chairperson of the National Assembly is here, Honorable Kigaba.
Chair, if you allow,
may I allow you
are ready to take the first quarterly report.
Yeah, I think you can continue, DG. Minister, continue with the report. Minister was requested to leave at 11 o'clock. How long are you going to take so that we give a minister some time to maybe reflect before she leaves, or for members to ask questions before she leaves?
We'll need about between 20 and 30 minutes for the first quarterly report.
Can you take 20 minutes, DG?
Yes, we will try and do that, Chair. And that presentation is going to be made by Mrs. Carol Nuka-Deliwe. Carol, just hit the punchline, sister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister, DG, and Senior Manager. So this is the first quarter of this current year that we are in, running from April to June. I will just dwell on a lot of the indicators were carried over from the previous APP and extended. We managed to retable in August to take into account emerging priorities that relate to the COVID response. So you will find that most of these indicators you have seen in some form or another in the DG's presentation. I'm also going to then very quickly run through the areas where we have particular concerns around performance. But overall, in this quarter, we had a hard lockdown, and therefore the majority of the work we do in terms of monitoring and oversight was affected by this. We have, however, since then, with the easing of the lockdown, we've been able to do a combination of digital and face-to-face monitoring to compensate for Q1 monitoring visits, reductions, and activity. So the majority of the indicators in this particular quarter were out of the 71 indicators, 58 are annual indicators. So we'll just be reporting on milestones as directed by the portfolio committee, but also on the monitoring, oversight, interdepartmental engagements between minister, between the DG, the deputy minister, provinces, and key other departments in response to the COVID response. I'm going to go very quickly then to the main issues relating to the program. Program one deals with administration, and in general, it looks at the way the department runs. Program two, program three, four, five remain unchanged in respect of the DG's presentation. We'll go to the next slide, please, which looks at basically overall, out of 11 quarterly indicators, we have this pattern of non-achievement and partial achievement. And all of these are mainly to do with the fact that we're in lockdown, we're not able to carry out face-to-face modalities as we normally are, whether it's in terms of program two, CAPS, monitoring of the CAPS for technical schools, program three, monitoring of PMDS and quality management systems with PEDs, the provincial departments, and in terms of program five, monitoring the safety framework and the nutrition provisioning. This is in addition, of course, to what the provinces do, but this is just the department, the national department's functions and the national department's monitoring and oversight functions. For the annual report in this quarterly report, we also give milestones in relation to the other targets, the other 58 targets. So this quarter, this pie chart looks at achievement of those 11, and we know that because of the concerns around lockdown, because we weren't able to do those reds and those yellows will change in quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, as reflected in our future reports. We are already assembling the quarter two reports. So in terms of program one, I'm going to just move very quickly to the tables of program one. This looks at administrative issues, payment of invoices, cases of misconduct, employee support and wellness, internships, etc. and those are fairly green. We'll go to the next slide. We'll just go right through to the next slide. Capacity building, and then the compliance issues around the planning, the next slide, the reporting, and compliance with National Treasury and DPME, Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation requirements for our obligations as a department, national department. The program one also looks at issues of corporate services, management, development, recruitment, next slide please, as well as risk adjustment and internal audit issues. In addition to that, program one covers legal, financial services. It covers the issues relating to just how we administered the department and also all the adjustments, the financial adjustments and performance adjustments that were made in response to our contribution as a sector to the COVID, the national COVID response. We also have work that was done in just preparing the department for the eventual return of the incremental phase-in return of officials to the actual department itself, in addition to the procurement requirements that we had to do in relation to COVID-19. Next slide, please. So we have a situation where we had extensive interactions. You can see the number of unscheduled meetings held almost quadruple the number of meetings that we would have in a normal quarter. And these were really related to interactions around the department. Next slide, please. We also had virtual meetings convened to deal with COVID-19 related matters. And these meetings are reflected on slide 25. Next slide, please. We had also extensive, we had to retable, the first time we've tabled two annual performance plans in 1 year to align with the COVID-19 pandemic response, but also with the special adjustments budget process, which normally happens towards the end of the year and was brought forward because of this extraordinary pandemic. We anticipate that in quarter three and four, we'll recover, if you like, in terms of the activities, monitoring activities, and I'll speak a bit about that in the other programs. Next slide, please. The next four or five slides just deal with sector reporting, HEDCOM and HEDCOM subcommittee engagements, and the kinds of work that we've been doing in terms of standardizing program performance information across the sector. We have also done a lot of work on service delivery improvement in the department, focusing on the certification of young people who apply for certificates so that they can start their journey in the world of work, in addition to the early grade reading work, which is being carried out in home languages in the Northwest, as DG had indicated earlier. So that work is carrying over from the previous. Yeah. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. We also done a lot of work on early childhood development, support and support of migration in relation to data and planning in this particular program. And then also whole school evaluation and work on assessment, especially school preparedness assessment for to take over the in readiness to take over the ECD function. Next slide, please. So I'll go straight through to the next slide, three or four slides, towards program two. In program two, as I mentioned, the monitoring of CAPS, monitoring of visits couldn't happen because we were in hard lockdown at the beginning of the quarter, and therefore the remediation would be that we will do monitoring visits, both digital and face-to-face, to escalate and expand our monitoring reach. And we'll find later, for instance, in program five, that has actually helped us to get better efficiencies and wider participation, if you like, using the digital and a combination of digital and face-to-face. Next slide, please. So program two really looks at curriculum monitoring of provisioning, whether in terms of learners with profound intellectual disabilities. It's an annual target, but we're doing a lot of work to identify gaps, to develop protocols and to roll out the program. Next slide, we'll just, the next five or six slides, we'll go through monitoring of ECD funding interventions, a preparation for the ECD funding delivery, preparation for the data management system, the EMIS system, will have to be delayed, but there's also work that's being done normally on monitoring of early grade reading assessments, monitoring of IOL, monitoring of implementation of the various curriculum programs, which have been held over, if you like, to the next quarter, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four. We'll just keep going. Obviously, it's not just stopping. We didn't stop the work. We did a lot of work in relation to preparing for quarter two and preparing for all these monitoring responsibilities that we have. And you'll find that in the slides all the way up to the end of this section. So program two from slide 54 just looks at the work that's been done on curriculum implementation, quality improvement, teacher development, content development. This is all in addition to the work that was being done on the COVID response and the curriculum response. The guideline development, draft guidelines. So even though we were not able to do our monitoring visits, there's a lot of work around guidelines and practice for practice that was done to cover special education, but also mainstream ordinary public ordinary schools. Then work on MST is presented as well in terms of the teaching plans, the retimetabling, the implications for teacher development, and content and pedagogy to support the timetables in response to the COVID pandemic. Next slide, please. We also had a lot of work in relation to just development and deepening of the coding and robotics curriculum, repackaging, and process plans for implementing the curriculum. MST integrated strategy, we had language edits completed and the finalization of the document in this quarter under review. Next slide, please. In terms of the LTSMs, as usual, the preparation for printing and distribution completed by June for grade 4 to 6, and then monitoring thereafter. So we'll be reporting in the future future quarters on how this is going, as it has been in the last few years now. So slides 62 and 63 look at the two volumes and the extent of provision and the state of play, if you like, in the provisioning value chain in each province. Next slide, please. And then the work on Braille materials and functionality testing within the of LTSMs was also rolled out. In terms of rural education, we have a slide 65, which looks at the pilot project and the extent of the research reporting on this particular project. Next slide, please. And then in terms of second chance matric, we had activity face-to-face, a combination of radio mediated, but also digital mediated content provisioning, implementation, but also teacher development and teacher support. And that is on slide 66. Next slide, please. Then in terms of program three, we had extensive work on teacher development, school governance and school management support. And you will see that most of these indicators are annual targets. You will just see in terms of the support work that was done in the first quarter, reported under the quarterly milestone. Next slide, please. Most of these indicators are carryovers from previous years, because essentially these are the indicators that are the competency of the National Department. We had a quarterly monitoring report for tracking Funza Lushaka graduate placement, and there was no deviation. That was the first quarterly indicator. Next slide, please. And so we present these to both PC and Select Committee on a regular basis, just to note information about placements, but also supply of teachers per province. The next slides look at annual reports, annual sector reports. These are because we are a concurrent function, most of the work we'll do is around national reporting on monitoring functionality, teacher development institutes, monitoring functionality and implementation of teacher development programs. And this is the work that's being done on tool development, on digitizing, on making access available, as well as the work on post-provisioning monitoring of compliance with the regulations and supply of grade R practitioners who are qualified. Next slide, please. Then we have also work that I had indicated earlier on quality management monitoring, which due to COVID, on-site monitoring was suspended, but then there are remote and virtual, a combination of remote, virtual, and face-to-face now taking place. In relation also to the PMDS, the Performance Management and Development System, I had indicated that we were unable to go out on a monitoring visit, but we will catch up in the future quarters. Next slide, please. So that's program three, and the indication, the rest of the slides in this program look at labor relations, the implications of the arrangements in relation to the COVID response, the implications of this on performance management, but also on whole school evaluation, training, and other HR-related issues that had to be dealt with in addition to what we normally do in terms of supply and utilization of teachers. So slide 80 then looks at a slide which we have presented previously. As at the end of June 2020, we present at least once or twice a year, we present placement rates per province. Thank you very much. Next slide, please. And then similarly, the filling of posts on slide 81 by province, teaching posts. Next slide, please. So we have the detail of teacher development activity, slide 82 onwards, teacher development orientation, Funza Lushaka awarding, and the mechanics of the Funza Lushaka bursary program for primary and high school. Those details are there. In terms of school governance management, school governing body survey and improvements, we have that, those details on slide 84, and the kinds of engagements we're having around with provinces on admissions, on other management and governance issues is detailed on slide 84 onwards. Next slide, please. And similarly, the work that's being done on the Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development, NICPD, in terms of just developing orientation and materials to support teaching and learning. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So program four looks at planning, information and assessment, and some of the work has been already touched on by Dr. Polia in relation to test development, developing exemplars, developing questions for the NSC, but also this looks at infrastructure as well, and DG has touched on some of the issues around infrastructure development, infrastructure rollout for water and sanitation, amongst others. In preparation for the general education certificate, we look at the preparations for that. Some of the test development has actually been delayed because of the difficulty in logistics during lockdown. But we know that in quarter two, we made up for it, whether it's in terms of digital, working around the issue and finding ways of test development panels to get together to review test items for both the NSC and additional assessments, national assessments. In relation to LURIS, then, with the learner unit record information and tracking system, there's work that was planned for monitoring provinces, but only in quarter two. So there's no quarter one target. We're including this for completion, just to say that it's an annual indicator. Work will start in quarter two, and we'll be reporting on quarter two when the time comes. Next slide, please. Similarly, the work that is related to national assessments or international assessments, and the launch of the Teaching and Learning International Survey, which we know happened in quarter two. Next slide, please. So there's also work that's being done on district support, district managers support, as well as district mentorship. And we provide milestones for that work for program four as well in these next few slides. Again, those things are carryovers because district support is where the closest we can get to schools as a national department in terms of our curriculum assessment monitoring. Activities. And then the work that we're doing on EMIS, on LURETS in program four, the work that we're doing in terms of infrastructure, the water and sanitation responses are all detailed. The work we're doing in terms of the minister's meetings and oversight of district management, monitoring of school preparedness, etc. All of that is presented under program four and is detailed in the slides. The work that's being done by the NIDU unit, as well as the head comm subcommittees, provincial budget analysis, UNESCO support of the department and the sector more generally, and international relations engagements on especially the COVID response in this quarter are critical. In terms of program five, again, program five has really been the engine of the COVID response. And in addition to the work that they do normally, providing nutritious meals, the safety framework, curriculum enrichment program, social cohesion programs, that work has been to some extent affected by the lockdown, but recovery programs and recovery work has been in quarter two and quarter three, especially planned, but also already started. Okay, and so the other slides just look at the areas of health promotion, psychosocial support, and other work that's been done in that particular program. The final section of this presentation just looks at quarter one financial expenditure. And as at the end of the quarter, we are 30% spending before the special adjustments, which really represented huge cuts to the department, but also to the sector broadly. The revised budget in the quarter two report will actually be reporting on the actual amounts. But as of the 25 billion rand allocation, 84% of it goes to transfer payments to provinces in the form of conditional grants, transfers to public entities, including Umalusi SACE, ETV CETA, and the NECT, amongst others, as well as other transfers as broken down on the slide. And then the remainder of the budget, 4 billion rand, is allocated to personnel and exams, moderators, earmarked funds, office accommodation, departmental operations. So a small amount really comes to the department compared to the rest of the sector. Next slide, please. Within the quarter under review, the expenditure was 7.62 billion. And of that, 6 billion was in terms of conditional grants and transfers to public entities, 39 million, and other transfers, 1.3 billion. And the remainder, again, was made up of mainly half of the remainder of compensation of employees, as per the breakdown on slide and the slide that's showing now. Next slide, please. And then, so this really looks at the key drivers of this expenditure. And you will see, for instance, in terms of the no spending in relation to administration, you will see then the effects of a lot of the reductions in costs and reductions in logistics, catering, et cetera, that was brought about in this quarter, as well as in the grants for MST, for instance, the conditional grants for MST and other grants within the department. In relation to the, I want to go back to the previous slide, please. Just driving that also program three in terms of the teachers program, the 91% expenditure is driven really by the transfer to the NSFAS in relation to Funza Lushaka bursary holders. So we tend to do that transfer first thing in the year so that it's available. And that's really what drove the 91%. So that 30% is being driven really by those large deviations at program level. Next slide, please. And then the slides that follow just look at different cuts of the same 30% spending. I spoke about the conditional grants, the MST conditional grant transfer was only 10% because of the slow procurement processes during lockdown. And we expect that to pick up in the third and fourth quarter. Similarly, workbooks, we expect from September onwards, we'll be reporting on higher expenditures in terms of printing and distribution, tranches of spending. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. In terms of metrics, second chance, because of the lockdown, again, we had to change modality from face-to-face, and this had implications then for teaching. And I've spoken about the NSFAS transfer. Next slide, please. So this slide cuts it by economic classification. You can see the effect on goods and services, but also the payment for capital assets. Next slide, please. And the detail is here in terms of compensation of employees. I've spoken about the vacancy rates. Moratorium on filling of posts was put in place, and that then resulted in low spending on COE, and as we're pending the organizational structure being approved in the quarter under review, after ministerial approval, we will be reporting on that in future. In terms of goods and services, I've spoken about the reduction of traveling and accommodation costs, transfers and subsidies. I've spoken about payment of capital assets, mainly really the infrastructure grants. Low spending was really about the construction sector itself and its response during the time of lockdown. So it only resumed fairly recently, and we expect that those spending items will accelerate from the second quarter of the financial year. Next slide, please. I'm really keen to finish because the minister is needing to leave. So I think basically this is a cut in relation to the different grants. Next slide, please. And also the cut in relation to the earmarked funds. I've spoken a lot about these. Next slide, please. And also the next, I believe the next one is to entities and other structures. Next slide, please. Yes. So, yeah. So that basically covers the presentation. Thank you very much. Apologies for being so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mtaweleng, are you around? Are you in?
Yes, I'm now. I've just reconnected about 10 minutes ago. Thanks a lot for the... I missed quite a lot in terms of the inputs. Where are we? Members engage, or is there any other report that needs to be given before we engage with the presentation? DG? DG?
We've presented both. We are done. We've presented both reports. The interim chair had indicated that if the minister is still around, the minister could comment before she moves to the NCCC. If the minister has left, it means we have covered both reports. Annual report and quarter one have now been presented, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. Can the Honourable Minister say something before she leaves, if she's still in the meeting? Let me check from the...
The Honourable Minister seems to have left, Chair.
Yeah, I'm checking that she's not on the list. She has left, yeah. So Honourable Members, that is the presentation from the department about their plans. And even the issues related to the writing of metric. There were concerns about children with high temperatures and those who test positive. But the best thing is that no student will be locked out of exams because of their temperature or their health. I'll give over to the members those who want to ask questions. Let us engage with the presentations. Thank you. I see from the raise of hands, there's a Honorable Bongiwe, the chairperson, and Chantel King, Uslindi Lelthuli, Hanif Hendricks, and Dr. Thembekwayo, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, and morning to yourselves and all members. Apologies for joining late. I just needed to do something else. DG, thank you very much for the thorough presentation and well-crafted presentation. One must say that it has not been an easy year for all of us. This 2020, but at least you have tried as the department under the circumstances to try to reach the targets, and which is understandable. One thing that I think I must raise, DG, which is really worrying me, is the issue of Note 26, your fruit test and wasteful expenditure. I think it is a worry. It has been mentioned that there is a process that you are engaging on of investigations. And I think as the committee, we just need to be appraised on that process, and also to say that it's a lot of money that is fruitless and wasteful, according to Note 26. And the second issue that I want to raise, DG, is your sanitation project. Last year, you have told us that there are about 41 inappropriate schools that have got sanitation program that you are busy with. But I think the reality of the matter is that we need to agree that we don't get to a point where we are getting it right as with infrastructure programs in the department. And I understand that there is a serious backlog. So one cannot expect that we would really open our eyes and everything will be hurry-gurry. But That is also something that is worrying, and I think we need to raise. Now, a straightforward question, DG, which I would want to understand from you. I think every member now is aware what has happened in the Western Cape yesterday in one of the schools in the Frankenstein. My question is, what is DBE's view on the fact that Western Cape has got an HOD that is over 65 years, still on the system, still functioning as if nothing is wrong with that? Meanwhile, you've got a lot of young people that could be able to do well in the position. What I'm saying is, why should it be allowed under these circumstances where we've got many people who are unemployed, many people who have both qualifications and experience, but you sit with an old man over 65 years heading the department in the Western Cape as if there is nothing wrong with that? What is your intervention as DBE? Because it cannot be accepted. Something needs to be done. An old man must be asked to step aside to allow space for young people to proceed and lead the department. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, next one on this.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Honorable King speaking. I'm first going to start on the grade 12 examination, where we said we've roped in the Department of Health to assist. But we've also noticed that some of the unions on social media has indicated that they are not going to allow some of their members to be bullied into invigilating learners who test positive for COVID-19. So I just wanted to find out from the DG, what engagements was conducted with unions to thrash out the matter of the Department of Health involvement in ensuring that the exams continue smoothly and that every learner is being given an opportunity to write the exams. Also, which is concerning, which was mentioned, was that some of our learners actually contracted COVID-19 due to spring camps, which was held. So my concern would then be how many of these learners were actually thoroughly tested and the educators that also accompanied them during the spring schools. Because remember, most of them go into the communities as well, because we are a microorganism of our community. So it would be interesting to find out if all the learners in those camps were actually thoroughly tested for COVID-19. And then, DG, you know, I've always had the issue where I would say in some of our KPIs, I am a bit concerned with the low targets being set, and you don't actually get a true reflection of what is actually going on in the department in terms of monitoring and evaluation. Because in some of the KPIs, you would say that the threshold is 4 and you pat yourself on the back by achieving 5 or 6. And then you look at the importance of those KPIs and then you raise questions to ask, are you really performing that well, given that the KPI is not even adequately set to say that, yes, the department in all provinces are actually performing to its best limit. Then also, DG, the full service schools, I would really like to get an indication of how many of these schools were actually converted within a year's time to be properly equipped to function optimally. Because, yes, you still find in some provinces, if you go around, that most of the schools are so dilapidated. Some of the schools, I visited the school 2 days ago, where the principal was so concerned when they showed us that the school now for 7 years, they've been waiting even for the school to be built. They are a full service school and yet they are operating out of 5 shacks. So that is a bit concerning. So I would have loved to have known how many of the schools were actually converted. And then it was also noted in our previous meetings that we had that there isn't proper legislation for learners with special educational needs. Yes, we have policies, we've got guidelines, but if we don't have legislation to actually speak to it, then how serious are we when it comes to special needs education in order to show that there's proper legislation? So I feel, DG, as we are still going to discuss the Bella Bill, that we should actually give consideration for legislative changes to address special needs education going forward. Also need to get an indication on the status of second chance matric. The program itself, it was supposed to be completed in 2020. Will extension then be granted for another year for its completion to take place, given that we had COVID-19? The Lushaka bursaries. Every year we get an indication of the Lushaka bursary holder. We get how many bursaries we are giving out. But my concern is when those students or would-be educators ended up entering the spheres of education, you find that most of them are not actually part of your STEM cohort, which means you get a teacher that can teach math lit but cannot teach proper maths. So if we in the future could possibly maybe get a breakdown of how those bursaries were distributed, because my concern would be that we might find a lot of language educators. You might find a lot of foundation-based educators, and then we might have an issue when it comes to high school educators in terms of our STEM subject. Also, when it comes to the financials and the Auditor General report, I looked at it, and I do understand you've tried your best and under the circumstances of COVID-19, and I do realize that. But the concern is that our financial controls have not really much improved, especially when it comes to irregular expenditure. When you go on the report of last year, it is almost exactly a same replica to say that our internal financial controls are not up to standard. Hence, we always have the outcome that we get from the Auditor General. So I would have liked to have seen from the past to now, what improvements have we done on the Auditor General's responses? I know at some stage at the beginning of the year, you gave us something like that. But now, given that this is what the AG is telling you, you've still been doing wrong. What are the consequence management procedures that will now be put in place? And then the last one, when it comes to our general education certificate for grade 9, how far are we on that discussion? Because I do feel the time for implementation was supposed to be next year. So I'm a bit concerned with the COVID-19, how far discussions on the implementation of the general education certificate would be. And then lastly, the Western Cape Secretary General, they have had interviews. I know, though, they are going to have replacement chairperson when you talk about 65. But I feel in other provinces, we have the exact same thing, where we find all the people also in control. Sometimes you find people that doesn't even know what their job entails, especially in the province of Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and those areas. So I do feel that the DG,
Order, Chairperson.
Honorable King.
Let us not allow members to generalize in this meeting with nonsense that is racism. Because what I'm raising of the HOD is facts. Let us not come and be racist in this meeting with issues that are general. Because if there are issues of that nature in other provinces, Honorable King can just raise them with facts, raising name and where those people are. She might not come and encourage racism in this meeting and be allowed to do so.
Okay, can we have order? Oh, can there be order, please? Honorable King, you've got the right to comment on, you know, the matters raised in this meeting. But at the same time, we need to make sure that when we do that, we don't, generalize. I'll say that if there is issues like this, let us raise them. If there's any other person who is over age, where is, you know, that he is not supposed to be holding that post because he's above the retirement age, all those people need to step down. There must be a way of making sure that there is quicker replacement and that we've got new people coming in to run these departments. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, may I object as well? Chairperson, if you also note, tell me where was I racist in any of those statements that I mentioned about there were interviews which took place? I would like to have clarity.
Do we really need to go into this? Because this meeting is going to end up...
I just feel we need to be fair. No, we're talking about the age.
I've made my ruling. I've made my ruling that we continue with this meeting, and that the main point is that if there are people who are over age, who are not supposed to be at work, they are supposed to be on pension, all of them, everywhere, all over the country, those people need to be replaced by people who are qualified, who will be able to perform those duties. I think that is my take, honorable members. And I suggest that we should continue with the meeting. Who was the next on the...
Thank you, sir.
The next person was Mem Luthuli, Slindile Luthuli, Madandona. Slindile. You are muted, Honorable Luthuli. Can the host help us with unmuting Honorable Luthuli?
Chairperson, she is not muted. I think she may have a problem with her mic on her side, but on this side she is not muted, sir.
No, let's keep her and then get on to the next person. We'll come back to Honorable Luthuli. The next person is Hanif Hendricks. Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I've listened to all the presentations, and what comes through clearly is the empathy that very senior officials of the department under the leadership of the GG is having for our learners. And I feel very comfortable that our learners have the best chance of passing the examinations that they are sitting, and we obviously wish them everything of the best. The first prize, of course, Honorable Chair, is that all our learners sitting for examinations after months of trauma and difficulties, that they all proceed to the next year. And it'd be interesting to hear from the DG and others and yourself whether there is a possibility that all learners who are sitting now for examinations will be able to next year move on to the next standard, taking into account the extraordinary circumstances that they had to face and the extraordinary measures that officials have taken to give them their best chance of passing. And obviously, Al-Jamal's point is that if all else fails and they don't pass, there must be provision that they move to the next standard. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you. Pass one, pass all. Sorry about my comment. Who is the next one on the... It's Honorable... Dr. Tembekwayo, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm not say, but all the same, I've got only two questions, and I won't switch off my video because my connection is unstable where I am today. But I just want to ask about the same question that I asked the minister during the session, to say in cases, in unforeseen cases, like the one for COVID-19, I asked whether it's not possible for the Department of Education to create a toll-free line. And if I'm talking about a toll-free line, I'm not talking about a line that will keep a person holding and transferring you from 1, 2, 3, 4. I just need a direct line that can be used by both the educators and learners. For an example, the line that was created by the Western Cape for the workers to report those unforeseen circumstances, to say, how far are you in connection with that line? Because it would save the South Africans a very beautiful function. And then the second one is based on Program 3, to say, I just need to ask, what are the powers of the SGBs in connection with the appointment of the principals in their schools? Because in most cases, we find that their decisions, the decisions of the SGBs, are overruled by the decisions taken by the district officers present in the interview, who would overrule the decision of the appointment of the SGB's preferred candidate to their own candidate, forcing the community and that school and SGBs to accept their own preferred choice, and bringing the whole school being an ungovernable. Thank you.
Chairperson, we can try Honorable Luthuli.
Thank you. I'll switch off my camera because maybe it's my network this side. I don't know whether I'm audible now.
You are audible, Honorable Luthuli.
Thank you so much, and greetings to everyone. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure question has already been asked. So mine is to the department. What are they doing about the schools that still haven't given out the second term and third term reports to the matric students who want to apply for next year studying? Because I have like 5 to 6 schools in Redway, KwaZulu-Natal, where matriculant haven't received their second and third term report, which is a bit of a problem for them to be able to do the application for next year. Thank you.
The chairperson, Gigaba, I think Honorable, the chair of the select committee may have left us again. Would you be able to take over? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, who is supposed to speak after Honorable Luthuli?
Chair, that was the list. That was the list of questions from members, Chairperson.
Any other member that wants to raise questions? I see the hand of Honorable Lihihi. Can you proceed?
Thank you, Chair.
ke support e seng e tla siang ba ithuti ba bana le anxiety ka ntla ya go tshwaetsa ke COVID-19 go ba khone go dira ka natla mo di examen tsa bone. Ke la boga chairperson.
Thank you, ma. DG, can we allow you to lead the responses?
Thank you very much. Let me thank honorable members for very pointed questions, always keeping us on our toes. A team of senior managers is part of this meeting. They'll help me to respond to these questions. I would like to start with the last question from Honorable Lihihi, who says, what support can be given to grade 12 learners who are engulfed in probably anxiety and fear? Indeed, we've been privileged to visit provinces and visited over 200 centers across the 9 provinces, Dr. Maboya, the subject specialist, and myself. The subject specialist, we used the opportunity of the spring camp to just go and meet with where these young people had gathered and get a sense of the readiness in terms of curriculum coverage from the meetings that we would have had with provincial officials, giving us the assurance that curriculum coverage is 100% and learners are ready to write exams. Well, indeed, what I personally came across was just amazing. Part of the purpose was to go and motivate young people to get them settled first, get them focused, give them some tips. If they exhibit signs of anxiety, try and link them to psychosocial services that we have. But to my surprise, I found them upbeat. Many of them couldn't wait to get into the exam room and write. In Limpopo, for instance, they said to me, we are ready, we want to write. But you do have these services at district level, psychosocial support. You have what we call school-based support teams at school level. At district level, you've got district-based support teams. And these teams would be able to provide the psychosocial services support that young people require. Dr. Whittle is in this meeting. He had also worked with other NGOs to provide online services as well as face-to-face services with, NGOs such as Loveline, Love Life, and many others, including higher education institutions that provinces had gotten into partnership with. One of the things that we did in preparing for the reopening of schools was to take stock of, among others, the psychosocial services that are available out there for parents and learners. And that information is available for any learner who might need it. But districts and provinces also told us that they had people visiting them, psychologists, social workers in John Taule, Khaitsiwi. I came face to face with a psychologist at some point who had come to address learners. I came across a medical doctor who was brought in to motivate learners before they had exams. That's Honorable Lihi. Honorable Lutuli, it would help us a lot if we could get details of the schools that you are referring to. The second quarter report wouldn't have been available. Remember that we canceled the June exams, but the report that should be available should be for the preparatory exams, which will be for your third quarter. That report should be available for all learners. We spoke to all universities and we did indicate to them that the June report will not be available. it will only be available after the preparatory exam. That's the report that grade 12 learners who need to submit to universities would be able to have. Other than that, universities are also using the grade 11 report. I have had several meetings with the forum representing universities. I think it's USAF, if I'm not mistaken, met with the CEO. We met with a number of heads of universities. They asked several questions, including curriculum coverage and so on. And that's when we discussed the issue of the reports, the issue of the curriculum coverage and so on. If we could just get details so that we help these young people, we link up with schools to make the third quarter, the third term report at least available to these young people so that they are able to submit at universities. Honorable Tembekwayo, maybe I might have not been as articulate as I should. I did indicate that we have two toll-free lines. One is a toll-free line that we have in the department we've been having all the time. If it's even available on the back page of every workbook that we issue out, I'll ask Mr. Mahara to make it available to members of the portfolio and select committee as well. There is a toll-free number in the presidency, and we are linked to that toll number as well. Anything that has to do with education, we are called upon to respond, and we are given tight time frames within which we've got to respond. So those are the two toll-free numbers that we have, one for basic education, the other one in the presidency. And then powers of the SGB. It might be that I might be biased on this one, Honorable Tembekwayo. If you take me on that one, I'll plead guilty before you do that. In my previous experience as the regional chief director, I've had encounters of this nature. My recollection in terms of the law is that school governing bodies recommend, and in the interviews, an official of the department would sit as a resource person. That's how the role is defined in terms of the policy. So the SGBs would recommend, and then the head of the department would consider the names that are made for recommendations, and of course, taking into account various aspects of the criteria. One of them is that the candidate must meet the minimum requirements. Number two, you look at how they've performed. Number three, you look at issues of equity, et cetera, and et cetera. And more often than not, you'd find that in some instances, not all instances, school governing bodies would score somebody higher, but say, actually, Mweli is our person. We want, Mweli is the one that we want. But they would score me lower than somebody who would appear to be the one that comes out in terms of performance in the interview to have performed better. And in that instance, then the argument becomes a bit weak, because the scoring, the performance in terms of scoring of a person that they are not looking for might be higher. The one that they are looking for might be number two or even number three. Or in some instances, after scoring, they simply say, no, actually the person that we are looking for is Mweli. But when you look at the outcomes of the interview, you find that it's something else. But the law says they recommend, and the head of the department appoints. And officials are resource persons in the interview. Their role is to advise and provide guidance. They do not recommend. They don't play the role of recommending to the, is the role of the SGB. In fact, this matter is subject to the amendment to the Bella Bill, where there are views that are saying this responsibility must be taken away from SGBs because it makes transformation very difficult. I've had cases I was a regional chief director in the Kenneth Kaunda district. It was very difficult to say your recommendation does not support transformation, because governing bodies would be of the view that the person that they want to head the institution is this one, regardless of whether it supports principles of transformation or not. So there are those issues, but I'm sure getting deeper into the nitty-gritties of the case, it will come out whether officials have overstepped or whether there's something that got missed by the SGB. I'm sure if you could get details, would be more than happy to. Mr. Ndlebe is one official who's quite excellent in looking at this matter, and his advice to us has always been amazing. So if we could get details, we'll put Mr. Ndlebe to the case. Mr. Ndlebe will be able to tell us what happened exactly. So that's about the toll-free direct line and the SGB. Honorable Hendricks, wonderful recommendations. And it's so heartwarming when it comes from a senior citizen in our parliament to commend the work that we are doing. What we can assure you is that these young people won't be compromised. We have provided the requisite support to the best of our ability, and I've never seen them so upbeat and excited, particularly grade 12 learners, like we have seen of this group. And my view is that given all these difficulties, whether they are able to meet the performance of the previous course or not, I think the fact that they just were able to go and write, and that's why we feel that whether the temperature is high, whether they test positive or not, they must be allowed to write. I don't think that many of us would have been as courageous and as resilient as they are. A few of them, of course, decided to cancel the academic year, but you can see from about 616,000, close to 600,000 of them wrote, and we quite cautiously optimistic that they should do well. And in terms of the lower grades, it won't be pass one, pass all. They will have to meet the requirements. And we are confident that schools, authorities, district authorities will handle the situation very well. But thank you for the advice. I take your advice very serious. Honorable King, you've raised about 11 issues from what I've been able to record here. Well, the difficulty is that, as you know, that education is a concurrent function. The minister can't dictate as to which official should be appointed in any province or in any post. As we all know, that is the purview of the MEC, the head of the department in each respective department. And whether, I mean, you can offer an advice, whether you could direct that an official so-and-so must be removed. That authority doesn't exist in our laws, nor our constitution, but you can simply advise. The constitution is very clear. The spheres of government are interdependent and interrelated, and no sphere of government is subordinate to one another. That's why you use provisions such as Section 100, if you are to take over responsibilities, and you have to go through the National Council of Provinces to afford you the authority to do so. So that there are officials at provincial education departments who might be incompetent. Maybe if we have specifics, we could take that up with MECs and HODs in the interest of improving the performance of the sector. That would be quite helpful. Dr. Mabuya will just bring us up to speed about the GETC. My last recollection was that we had submitted to Umalusi for consideration so that we would move with the approval of this qualification. Consequence management, the report presented to the portfolio committee last week by the Auditor General said, unlike the previous years, they couldn't find any instance where we have not carried out the investigation and we've meted out consequence management. That's the report of the Auditor General, which was presented to both the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee, which I was part of last week. So that's what the report said of the AG. Financial controls, indeed, we do have, we still have weaknesses in our financial controls. We are the first ones to concede. Irregular expenditure is in supply chain carried out by implementing agents without considering the relevant instructions from National Treasury. That's how, in the main, a transaction becomes irregular. And Chair, I must say that it doesn't mean that money of the department has not been put to good use. All that it means is that maybe one person has not submitted a tax clearance certificate that all amounts to irregular expenditure. If you have not followed a specific instruction note, that constitute irregular expenditure. And in fact, Honorable King, in terms of irregular expenditure, our irregular expenditure has more than doubled. It's an area that we have not done well in, I want to concede, but it's simply because of supply chain processes at implementing agent level. There is one matter that we are following of about 500 million, which matter should have been cleared in terms of the court case that dealt with that matter in terms of irregular expenditure, but it was also added to the irregular expenditure of the department reported in terms of the year under review. The Funza Lushaka buzzers, that some of them do not necessarily form part of the STEM cohort. Well, this is being dealt with because they are being monitored on a yearly basis. If you have registered for a particular program in the past, they would register for BSc in maybe in education. Later on, they would change. The line function has informed me that that doesn't happen anymore because they are being monitored. If you don't meet the requirements, the buzzer is being withdrawn. I know of some students whose bursaries got withdrawn because they deviated from courses that they initially enrolled. So it could be, you know, your STEM subjects, it could be foundation phase, it could be intermediate phase. The line function has informed us that they are indeed monitoring. Status of the second chance matric program, I've been informed that we are coming back to you on the second chance metric program, and I'm sure we'll engage even further with you on this. But what I can tell you is that that program is not coming to an end. We are going to continue with it to support grade 12 learners to meet the requirements of the National Senior Certificate. As it is now, there is no decision to bring it to an end, to the best of my knowledge. But Dr. Maboya can add there, because he's the manager responsible. No proper legislation for learners with special education needs. This comes from the Fiscal and Finance Commission. I have expressed my disagreement with this. I do not agree. I believe that the South African Schools Act fully cover learners with special education needs. The founding policy is the White Paper 6. The only thing that we need to do is norms and standards for funding of schools for learners with special education needs. That's the only missing element in the jigsaw puzzle. And that would not necessarily necessitate for a separate legislation. You do that in other countries, we've been warned, you do it at your own peril. And you are moving schools of learners with special education needs from the mainstream, and they would easily become the Cinderella of the system. So that's the word of caution around that. And the view of many experts is that keeping it together with the rest of the system and keeping it on the radar of the entire system, it will serve the sector much better than dealing with it separately from the rest of the system. Full service schools, we are also coming back to you on a comprehensive presentation on inclusive education, which I think we should be able to give you details in terms of how many schools have been converted into full service schools and when. If that question is not answered now, the portfolio committee has directed that we must come with a presentation on inclusive education, and it will definitely contain full service schools as a component of that presentation. Low targets, I don't know, Honorable King. The APPs and strategic plans are discussed with the portfolio committee before they are finalized. If it's about visiting schools, let me also indicate that other than the national department, provincial departments visit schools, districts visit schools, and in fact, the role of a national department is to check whether the provincial department is providing support to districts and eventually to schools. Visiting schools is just to verify and authenticate whether that is happening. And the number of visits, to the extent that you've got too many of them, I'm not sure if the number is an X number enough to be able to verify and authenticate, I think that should suffice. But I'm sure it would continue to be a debate between honorable members and ourselves, feeling that maybe the number of some of the visits are just not as many as they would like them to be. But not forgetting that our main occupation is policy development and support. How many of the learners have tested COVID positive, and educators, have all learners been thoroughly tested? There is no capacity to do that in this country. As we all know, that our testing is based on mass screening, mass testing, but not testing everyone. The country is unable to do that. We don't have the capacity as a country to do that. I don't know any country that has the capacity anyway to be able to do that, to test everyone. There are instances where you do that. In the outbreak, the first outbreak in the Eastern Cape, I think it was about 250 learners. Dr. Khumalo is in the meeting. She can help us to do that. I'm going to request her to comment on this one. I don't think there is capacity in the country to test everyone. But we would have preferred that that happens, Honorable Key, especially if incidents happened at a camp. I'm not sure whether we've even verified that the infection happened in the spring camps. The fact that learners were in a spring camp, which was about 5 days, until we verify and there's evidence to suggest that they got infected in the camp, I'll remain cautious about that. But I know that it's been said by our officials. I'm sure if Dr. Khumalo and Dr. Polia could indicate how many learners have been tested, but what we all know is that people go for testing if they present with symptoms or if they've been in contact with somebody who has tested positive. You self-isolate, then you go for testing, and the experts will advise whether it's close or casual contact. Then you go for testing, and they will provide advice in that regard. Honorable Chair, I take your point. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Our position is to recover this money from everyone as far as possible. The Auditor General has reported when they presented their report that in terms of material irregularity, they've even audited the extent to which we've tried to recover this money. Advocate Misa is in the room. We involved there in terms of the legal means also to recover this. And our intention, where there's been fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we'll do everything in our power to recover taxpayers' money. But the first prize is to avoid fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Let me give an example. In fact, I've done that during the course of the presentation. schools are identified for maybe a school building or sanitation, and from DBE, ACD, the evaluation is done of assessment, not evaluate, assessment is done. You send professionals to go and do assessment. Then you send another batch of professionals for now the finalization of the delivery of the project. And you discover that, in fact, that school has been matched with another school. And that communication has not happened from provinces. In many instances, that would lead to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In some instances, is when you do an assessment and you incur expenses of professional fees, and somewhere down the line, you discover that you don't have enough money to deliver those projects. That is also categorized as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Although you would take into account that if those plans and the information of on assessment would still be used when money is available, it's really not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But at the time when the audit is carried out, because those projects could not be included in the list of projects to be carried out, it would be classified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Chair, I've really tried. I'm going to request that you allow colleagues to also comment on some of the comments that I've offered, starting with maybe Dr. Maboya and any other official who might want to do so. Oh, let me, the Brackens Field School. Well, we've been in contact with the Western Cape Department of Education. Our understanding is that the situation is now under control in that school, and we regret the incident that unfolded yesterday. About the HOD of the Western Cape, I think what I can say is that it's indeed true that there is somebody called Mr. Brent Walters, who has been the HOD of Sports and Recreation in the Western Cape, who was among the candidates who got interviewed for the post. And the indication is that he was being vetted to now get ready to start with the job of the HOD, Western Cape Department of Education. But I must say that the decision to even appoint the HOD beyond his lawful retirement age was a decision taken by the Premier of the Western Cape, the current and the previous, together with the current MEC, to get him extended with no concurrence from the minister. As I've said, we could advise, but the authority that we have is extremely constrained on these matters of appointment in provinces and so on. Thank you very much, Chair. As I've requested, if Dr. Maboya and other colleagues could come in and help me with some of the questions that I might have not adequately addressed.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Chair, honorable members and colleagues. DG, you have actually covered almost all the questions, but maybe the few ones that I could add to is the questions that were asked by Honorable King with regard to the unions, whether the unions were consulted with regard to the invigilation of learners who have tested positive. So my response to that is that indeed there have been consultations with teacher union principals, and even the circular that we have issued out on the 8th of November, circular E31 of 2020, we do have inputs from a teacher union principal. So indeed there was a consultation with regard to unions. But in addition to that,
In the circular itself, we have outlined a range of options with regard to, you know, who could be used for invigilation. We have included educators, we have included health workers, we have included private invigilators, and we have made it very clear, I think it is very explicit in the circular, about the fact that whoever invigilates will have to consent to invigilating these learners. So I think in the main, what we are saying is that indeed there has been consultations, and we have also given a number of, you know, options. With regard to whether learners attending camps were tested, I think DG has already spoken to that, to say that there's no capacity to test. However, as a preventative measure, we made sure that all COVID-19 measures and protocols were put in place to ensure that the health and safety of teachers, learners, and other admin staff were not compromised. So we have been to these camps, and we have seen that indeed social distancing was observed. Learners were wearing their masks, and all the other, you know, protocols such as sanitation, where sanitizing of hands, were observed. And with regard to the full service schools, I think the question from Honorable King was whether how many schools were converted in 2019-2020. So the response to this is that there were no schools who were converted in the year under review. The reason being that the AG, in performing the education sector audit of full service schools in 2018-2019, identified several shortcomings and weaknesses regarding the program itself. So as a result, what we did from our side was to issue out circular S4 of 2019 to halt the process and to guide PEDs on remedial actions to be taken in order for us to turn the situation around. And in addition to that, what we did, we have also developed and distributed standard operating procedures to guide the schools in terms of the designation, the conversion, and the resourcing of full service schools. And I think we are quite hopeful that after all this guidance has been given, we will be able to deal with matters that relate to full service schools. And the second chance metric program, I think DG, you are correct. Actually, the program will still be in place over the current MTEF. So this will still be in place. With regard to GEC, of course, DG, you are correct to say that the college qualification policy framework has been submitted to Umalusi. Umalusi has since made some recommendations, and we are currently in the process of processing those recommendations. And before the end of this week, the policy itself, the framework, will be back to Umalusi so that they can finalize issues. As to when are we writing up to so far in terms of our plans, we want to implement the GEC in 2022. DG, I think the others, especially with regard to whether there's going to be pass one for school, you are correct that we have guided provinces of a number of circulars that we have issued out along the lines of, you know, assessment to make sure that we are on the same page with regard to assessment, and even the fact that the policy on the pass requirements will apply even in 2020. DG, I think I have tried to cover where you did not cover. Thank you very much. Thank you, DG.
Mr. Pereaki, maybe on Funza Lushaka.
Thank you, DG. Just to indicate, yes, we do have information by specific subjects, and just to indicate, and we can make that available, and when we do present in future, we will share all that information. But just to illustrate that in this year, 2020, we have a potential 4,700 Funza Lushaka graduates that if they are successful, they will be eligible to be placed next year. And interestingly, out of that, 2,600 of them are basically would graduate in the MST. That's your math, science, and technology subjects. And then you have like a 1,700 in foundation phase. So we do have a large number of, the majority of the learners that are allocated are in the math science, but in the plans going forward, we are looking at other technology subjects as well as robotics and coding when we are recruiting Funza Lushaka bursars going forward. And in addition to that, while we talk of Funza Lushaka, we also have those who have, through other bursaries and even their own funding, we have approximately 15,000 that do graduate there. We will look into that area as well in terms of what specialization, but we do not really have the control over what they enroll into. But on Funza, clearly we do prioritize the maths and science, and our graduates, even of the number that do come out, which is around 4,500, the majority are in the math, science, and technology subjects. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Mr. Parayaki. Mr. van der Westhuizen, on sanitation and infrastructure projects, any contribution from your side?
Thank you, DG, and greetings to the honorable members. Just a quick, I think the detailed question has been responded to, just a quick overview on our city. There was 361 projects earmarked for replacement, 251 of them have been completed. On the water supply side, there's 1,326 projects, 1,021 has been completed. On electricity, 373 projects, all of them have been completed. On sanitation, on a city, there was 1,064 projects, 885 of those have been completed. We deal specifically with SAFE. The members will recall that the program was launched to specifically look at the eradication of basic pit toilets. And from the provincial side, schools were nominated to become part of that program, and there was a list of 3,898 schools on that list. And I think DG has also indicated the process of how do we do this. We need to go out to those schools, go and do an assessment, find out what is there, what is the real. And in that process, we have found that about 239 of those schools have been either combined with other schools, merged, or just closed as unviable schools. And we've also confirmed that some of these schools do indeed have appropriate sanitation. So that takes almost 1,000 out of these 3,898, take care of that. Then there are also schools that once we've got the names and we started to check what's happening with those, we're also forming part of other programs. I mean, 68 of those schools were on a city and 57 of those have already been completed. There's about 777 schools that are part of provincial EIG programs. About 50% of those have already been completed. And then donors also came to the party and donors started to assist us. And we have 124 schools where donors assisted and 85 of those schools have also already been completed. Thanks, DG.
Thank you, Mr. van der Westhuizen. Chair, thank you very much. That's our response to the comments and questions asked by honorable members. Thank you ever so much for each and every comment and question raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Is there any other member that feel that is not adequately responded to? No one. Okay. No, then, which means we have come to the end of our meeting, and today we do not have minutes to adopt. So thank you very much, DG, for both the annual report and the first quarterly report. And thanks to the honorable members and all the support staff that were with us in the meeting.
The meeting is then adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Hi, Louis.
Hi. I'm going to end the session. Hi, everybody.
Where's Portia?
Hi.
Okay, I'm off now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.